Before coming to practice meditation and sit in samadhi, concentration, the mind is hot, restless, filled with all kinds of mental states of turbulence, hesitation and doubts. Sometimes it is irritated. You see, these five things are obstacles that block the mind from becoming peaceful. There is sensual desire, ill will, satisfaction in sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and so on. The mind constantly holds on to these states as its objects. Sometimes it becomes angry or hateful, even thinking of harming others, and is filled with doubts, restlessness, and irritation. As soon as you try to sit in meditation, you become sleepy. But when you don't meditate, the eyes are wide awake. This is called the things that block the mind from encountering goodness. We are familiar with these things. When we sit in meditation, we radiate loving kindness, wishing all beings to be well and happy. May we ourselves be well and happy. And we keep practicing spreading loving kindness regularly. We develop compassion, thinking of helping those who are suffering. For those who rejoice in doing good, our hearts also rejoice with them. Like today, we have undertaken the precepts together, and we rejoice together. When someone comes to make an offering, we say sadhu for the goodness they have sincerely practiced through their generosity. We also rejoice, and our mind gains merit along with them. Without envy or jealousy, we will be born into a high status family. That means our mind right now is elevated. It has already been born in this very moment. Our mind is bright and pure, born in a high state, not a low one. The mind, when it does not yet have sufficient mindfulness, runs after greed, anger, and delusion. Therefore, in the world today, we truly need to practice meditation much more. Because society now is extremely fast. It is a society in which we have developed so much knowledge up to the present age, and thus greed, anger, and delusion arise much more quickly than before. See, in the past, for example, if we wanted to go gamble, it was difficult. Now there is even online gambling. There are also many kinds of online scams, many scammers, many fraud rings. In the past, deceiving others wasn't easy. But now it has become easier because communication tools connect everyone instantly. This material progress, we thought it would bring only happiness. Cheating has become easier, killing has become easier, hurting other people's hearts and insulting one another have also become easier, causing our minds to become even more deluded. Everything has become too easy. Whatever we want, we just order it and it gets delivered to our home. There's no need to walk, no need to drive. It's become easier again. And so we become less cautious. Dhamma practitioners, too, end up following their feelings and desires even more. But if we remain within the boundaries of sila, morality, that is a proper balance. If we fall outside morality, then things will deteriorate even further. Like people who have cars, if they are wise, they use them well and make use of them beneficially. For lay people, having a car is necessary. From home to the monastery, it might be 20 or 30 kilometers. Some come from far, 50, 100, even 200 kilometers away. A car can be used beneficially. It depends on us, on whether we have wisdom. but some people don't know how to use it beneficially. They drive the car to harm members of their own family. For what? To get life insurance. For money. You see, this is wrong livelihood arising. They don't use it for benefit. Buying a car is already difficult, yet they lack wisdom. This wisdom is therefore extremely important. In today's society, we need even more wisdom, because the Dhamma is never outdated. So in the present era, if we understand the Dhamma, we can still see the Dhamma all the same. But it is harder than in the past, because there are so many sense impressions, so many sense stimuli. In a single day, we receive far too many sense impressions, and our mind runs after each of them. Even so, we still have faith. On Saturdays, Sundays, holidays, or on the days we gather together, such as on Fridays, we come together to sit in meditation, practice, and listen to the Dhamma. Or sometimes we have online Dhamma retreats. We make use of these developed forms of media in a way that benefits our Dhamma practice. This is called not being careless in our lives. Even though the world has become more developed, we can see that everyone's livelihood has become more difficult. Nowadays, the cost of living has also increased. When I was a child, my grandfather said that a bowl of noodles cost only a few satang cents. Oh, in my grandfather's time, a bowl of noodles was just one coin. We were shocked as well. We couldn't really understand it. Eh? Was it really just one satang? 5 satang, 10 satang used to have great value in the past. The satang unit, I still saw it in my generation. People around 60 years old should have seen it too. But in that period, in my time, a bowl of noodles had already become 1 baht or 1.5 baht, equivalent to 100 or 150 satang. As time passed, you see, after 60 years, it has become even more expensive. As for gold, in the past, in my generation, when I was around 20 years old, gold was 400 baht per baht weight. You could buy 1 baht weight of gold with 400 baht. Now it has risen all the way to 50,000 to 60,000 baht. How many times higher is that? 400, 4,000, 40,000, 100 times. Yes, more than 100 times compared to the old days. You see, the economy has worsened. Life has become harder, more difficult. The four requisites we have in this world are still the same, but the number of people has increased. The cost of living has risen. Income has been uncertain, and we develop many kinds of worries. Even though many factories and industries have been developed, people in the present era still suffer all the same. People in the old days suffered in their own ways. Sometimes they fell ill, but there were few medicines. It was hard to find remedies or treatments. Especially those born in rural areas, far from doctors and nurses, the life was difficult. Hospitals were only in the provincial centers. Sub-districts and districts still had no hospitals. But now it has become easier. Medical advancements have improved as well. Yet why do people in this era still have so much suffering? There is still hardship and difficulty. There are still people lacking necessities more than before. Because the land is the same size, but the population has increased. Therefore, what we must study and train in is to cultivate more mindfulness and samadhi, concentration, so that we can face and overcome whatever arises in our lives. because when we listen to the chanting, it tells us that we, all of us, already have suffering waiting ahead of us. When we hear it, we may wonder, suffering about what? Suffering awaits us ahead, suffering from aging, from illness, or from the body that must eventually break apart, from death, which we will inevitably face. And are we prepared yet? Sometimes it's easy to say, oh, it's natural, isn't it? Aging is natural, illness is natural, death is natural. But do we truly see that it is natural? Do we clearly understand it yet? This is where it becomes difficult. When it happens to us, we still cannot accept it. Why does this have to happen to me? Why? Because it is uncertain. Everything is uncertain. Our heart is beating right now. Every day it keeps beating, yet we don't know when it will stop. Sometimes a disciple we have known for a long time, just for a moment we look away, and then suddenly their heart has stopped. Some were working, some were exercising, and they died. The artist who painted the Buddha's life story at our monastery, a Sri Lankan man, he was painting in Italy. Even while painting scenes from the Buddha's life, at the age of 45, recently married, he had a heart attack and passed away. Oh, when we hear this, we see that it's all uncertain. But he must have had much merit as well. Painting the Buddha's life story, focusing his mind in concentration, his chance of being reborn in a good destination is great. Because it is also a righteous profession. And he painted in offering to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. His mind was joyful while painting. Whenever he died in that state, he went to a good place at that very moment. This shows that life is truly uncertain and that passing can happen at any time. So let us recollect this, breathing in, breathing out. If we simply observe the breath, that is samatha, tranquility meditation. But knowing that after an exhalation, it might not inhale again, or after an inhalation, it might not exhale again, that death can occur on any in and out breath moment. That is vipassana, insight meditation. When I had not yet ordained, I once went to ask Lumpur Kruba Intachak Raksa. He was over there at Wat Nam Po Luang in Chiang Mai province. I went to seek Dhamma. I asked him about vipassana. He said, the in-breath arises, stays for a moment, and the out-breath ceases. This is already vipassana. See, he was an arahant, living in the northern region. He taught in such a simple way. Therefore, when we know the breath, and when the breath becomes still, and we observe its arising and passing away, arising and passing away, that is vipassana. If one day we clearly see arising, persisting, and ceasing clearly, what is it like? We see the Dhamma. Oh, our life is arising and ceasing all the time. Thus, one who sees the Dhamma, it's like Venerable Sivali Mahathera. When he shaved his head and saw the hair fall to the ground, he became a sotapanna, a stream enterer. See, he saw the Dhamma right there, saw the elements, saw impermanence. He saw not self. But what we are trying to do, training and calming the mind, these are our tools. So set the intention to practice, to have generosity, to have sila, morality. If we're able to give, we try to give according to our strength and means, without harming ourselves and without harming others. We keep the precepts. We undertake the five precepts. Today, before doing merit, giving, or offering Sangha Dana, we undertake the precepts again. We have sila already. Or we can undertake the precepts in our own mind. Today I determined to keep the five precepts. That is already the five precepts. We can undertake them by ourselves. If we want the eight precepts, then we have the eight precepts. We can undertake them ourselves, voluntarily restraining. When our mind becomes calm and steady, supported by generosity, sila, and meditation, and we contemplate the body as a collection of the four elements, earth, water, fire, and wind, understanding arises, clarity arises, and we see the Dhamma. Therefore, we must prepare and train ourselves, because we will inevitably face mental states and moods, situations and experiences that we dislike or don't want to have. They come following the current of the world that changes extremely fast. Feelings of happiness and suffering arise constantly. External things are always fluctuating. Nothing can be relied upon. The Buddha said that this world is impermanent and that we should not cling to anything. We are merely visitors to this world and we cannot remain here. The elder monks also taught us that this world is never satisfied. It is a slave to craving. Nothing is ever enough. In this world, no one is truly great. It is aging, sickness, and death that are great. After being born, we must eventually leave everything behind. The great elder Arahants contemplated this and became weary of the world, so they left home to ordain. In some cases, the Buddha taught them to see the world as empty, and the Lord of Death would not be able to catch them. Listen, Mogaraja, see this world as empty. The Lord of Death will not be able to catch you. But if at any moment you see this world as self, then the Lord of Death will be able to catch you. If we lack mindfulness and wisdom, and if morality declines, it can become dangerous. Sometimes a father drives a car and kills his own child to get insurance money. Sometimes a child is so good, caring for a bedridden mother for 50 years without fail, and then exhausted, enduring, pushing beyond their limits, and eventually loses the ability to cope, becomes overwhelmed, and harms the parent out of desperation. They see no way out. Living to be over 100 years old, if one cannot take care of oneself, it is difficult all the same. It is difficult indeed. This is likely related to the karmic results of the body and aggregates. Therefore, if we are to live long, may we live long with strength, able to care for ourselves. A long life without the ability to help oneself brings suffering, and others will also suffer. But everything unfolds according to each person's karma. So let us accumulate as much goodness as we can. When we do not harm the lives of others, our own body will also be well. It will not be harmed by others. But if we have harmed others' lives before, that karma will follow us. Therefore, in this life that we have been born into, as long as we still have breath and still have mindfulness and wisdom, we should try to cultivate goodness, to create merit and wholesome qualities, especially the practice of meditation. This is something important and should be done every day, at the monastery, at home, or at work. Training the mind like this, eventually our mind will develop and understand. Even though the world progresses, we don't run after the world. We rise above the world. That is called Lokuttara, supramundane. If we run after the world, our mind becomes dark, because the world is dark, and those who are truly awakened are few. A young girl who constantly contemplated death listened to these teachings from the Buddha, and she understood this clearly. So let us constantly train and cultivate the mind to gain understanding, seeing everything, all phenomena, as empty at times, so that our mind becomes empty of greed, anger, and delusion. If we continue practicing like this, one day we will know the Dhamma and see the Dhamma. Finally, may all of you have prosperity both in the world and in the Dhamma. May your bodies be healthy and strong. May you have long life, beauty, happiness and strength.